Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I interrupted Professor Richard Epstein because I want to turn to the idea that gradualism is an answer to these disputes, especially when it comes to Roe v. Wade right now. But we've seen this before. Richard points to Lochner v. New York, which I recalled because it was a controversy during the Wilson administration. All of that came to the legislative branch, that is Congress, and eventually was resolved through the acts of Congress and other decisions over many decades. That example is gradualism working between the courts and the Congress. I want to know if that's possible when it comes to Roe v. Wade, Richard, because you mentioned Professor Richard Ray's piece in the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. He teaches at Virginia. He is clerk for Justice Kavanaugh. So he Judge Kavanaugh. So he is familiar with these details. Gradualism is something that has worked before. Will it work here?
Well, I think the answer is it's very hard to figure out what the intermediate position is. On some kinds of questions, you can get political solutions. Well, we think that the legislation should be for a 10-hour day rather than an 11-hour day or a 9-hour day. And so if you do this, you can kind of get incremental variations on some of these things. The problem about the situation in Roe v. Wade is the discontinuities are very, very sharp. So what happens is Justice Blackmun, pretty much out of whole cloth, invented a tripartite division, which has been subject to much ridicule. And in the first stage, the state is allowed to do nothing with respect to a woman. In the second stage, which is the middle trimester, roughly speaking, what happens is they are allowed to have medical safeguards, but you can't terminate the decision for abortion. And in the third stage, when nobody wants to have an abortion anyhow, you're allowed to stop it. Well, the first difficulty you get with this is, why is it in the first stage that medical interventions are inappropriate if they're appropriate in the second stage? He doesn't give any explanation for that in his particular opinion. So people say, what are you doing? The second question is, what do you mean by viability on these things? Is it going to be dependent upon technological advances of one kind or another? Or are you going to really abandon viability and then try to figure out what mental function is with respect to unborn children, fetuses? You have to choose your own word very carefully. Well, at that point, if you see electrical activity, do you have to interpret it one way or another? So there's just been a lot of confusion that are going on there, and none of these variations will satisfy anybody. So what you can do if you wanted to do it arbitrarily is, he said, we used to think that by and large the state could not protect the fetus in the middle trimester. Now we're changing the rule. Can't do anything in the first trimester, but after 15 weeks, he can do everything, and that would be an incremental decision, I suppose. But it's interesting, neither side is happy with that, because once it becomes 15 weeks, it can become 6 weeks, which is the period that's involved in the situation that's existing in Texas. So they're not going for that. Then there are other ways you could try to do this. You could say, look, we're going to expand the reasons why it's permissible to have an abortion. And you certainly say protecting the life of the mother is always one. And then you could say, suppose you have a seriously defective child identified as another, you can treat that. You can then say if a woman has been raped, she can have an abortion in order to deal with that. These are going to be covering 5% of the cases. The real battle is whether you're going to allow abortion at will. And it's not a very good compromise if you've got a narrow four-course set of regimes on the one side as opposed to abortion at will on the other. And so if you look at the way the oral argument went and the briefing is gone and the commentary is gone, everybody's sort of digging in on the extreme positions because the intermediate positions are not really going to be tenable.
However, gradualism worked with Obamacare. You can't find an issue that was more dynamic at the moment than that because it.
But it wasn't gradualism.
It turned on the 2012 outcome as we thought at the time, and Justice Roberts found a way in between the positions by making a declaration that this was a tax.
There's a confusion here that I think you have to be aware. Obamacare was a huge revolution in terms of the way in which we think about things. What Justice Roberts did is he upheld the whole thing. It wasn't as though he said you get half the bill on most of this, on the basic principles. There's the exception with some of the Medicaid situations where he did go the other way. But on the basic stuff, what he did is he said, I'm upholding this not under the Commerce Clause, but under the Tax Clause.
Right.
And at that particular point, they got everything. So it was not a gradualist decision. There was the other half of this opinion where he said, in effect, you could not, and I think he was correct about this, tell states that unless they basically give everybody the expanded Medicaid protection that they're going to get, you're going to lose all of the money that your state citizens contribute to Medicaid.
And at the time, that was seen as a compromise between those two decisions. Well, on the one hand, you can have Obamacare. On the other hand, you can't force it. And that was
You can't force the Medicaid exemption on people. But what happened, in effect, is if you're trying to figure out who got the bigger part of the loaf, it turns out it was clearly the passage of the basic statute that was the transformative event. I mean, what he did, in effect, is he actually got himself into some degree of trouble on the first half, because nobody could clearly understand why it was that after every single lower court had rejected the so-called tax theory, that he now comes around and resurrects it. In fact, he suffered a lot of abuse, particularly on the conservative side, for doing this sort of thing. I'm not sure you would want to call that gradualism of one form or another. Gradualism is what actually did happen in the case of Plessy.
Well, let me make a case for it, because many years later, during the Trump administration, which we could not have understood was actually going to happen in 2012, the Republican-dominated Congress made a very large attempt to undo Obamacare. And as I recall, it failed chiefly because of John McCain's vote going the other way. But that allowed the legislature to speak to what the court had provided as an opportunity to say yay or nay. And it worked.
Well, they did come back, and you're right. And the Democrats managed to fight this off. The program is not one of enormous popularity, but it's one of kind of steady popularity.
Right.
People said, oh, maybe it's not the great disaster that we thought it was, even if it isn't the great benefit that we thought it was. And generally speaking, if a law is in place, the political equilibrium is such that if only a bare majority of the people want to overturn it, it's not going to happen.
So like Lochner, it was a combination of the courts and the legislature working together to undo a bad decision. Is that possible with Roe? The two working together?
I just don't look. This is the solution, I think, the development that I would point to. In New York State, it's quite clear that Roe has got very strong supporters. And what happened is the state legislature passed the bill already, saying if Roe is overturned, we will, as a matter of legislative decision, treat it as the law of this particular state. The Solicitor General from Mississippi said this legislature can do what it wants on this, and so therefore he has no particular argument to stop New York. So if 20 states, 20 major states, simply announce the day after Roe is overturned that we will treat it as being appropriate, they get rid of the major objection. You're doing this by judicial fiat. You're now doing it by legislative choice. That is a compromise that you can make, which says, please overrule Roe. The argument now is, if you overrule Roe, the political solution will put back some version of a pro-abortion in some states, and if they do that, that's going to solve the problem. The answer that comes from the other side is, you're talking about all of the blue states. What about the red states? Because most of the attorney generals from the red states were on the side of Mississippi. And so you're then going to have a sort of a country in which you get legal abortions in some states, not in other states, people moving back and forth between states, wondering what the legalities are, and so on. So you get both arguments both ways, that you can do it by legislation, or if you do it by legislation, you'll lack uniformity.
And isn't that an illustration of what happened with Lochner and the workday and the work week? It over decades, different states applied differently. We're still doing that. We have right to work in some states and others we don't.
Lochner, what happened was, what the court did, in effect, is it struck down the 10-hour day. The incrementalism came in an odd fashion. There was a famous case called Mueller against Argonne.
We just have 40 seconds. Go ahead.
Three years later, which they said it's okay to have various kinds of protections on hours and wages for women, even if you can't do it generally. And so that did start the road downward. And in the end, the Fair Labor Standards Act in 1938, it was upheld and Lochner was no more. So there was some movement on that, less rapid than you might think. What there was a huge intellectual consensus developed in the progressive era that said Lochner was wrong.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. Sere Decisis is the institution that the court will deal with as they go forward, not only this year, but for the next 100 plus years. Richard's at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at the University of Chicago and NYU. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app,